Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at nashvillepublicradio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You. For those unfamiliar with our game, here's a few basics.
What is the object of the game, of course?
To win.
It's a hard-nosed, rough-and-tumble, overly hyphenated game with words, played by some pretty interesting characters.
I'm torn between the night sweat and the leather.
The night sweat.
Well, you can combine them.
Okay, let's party.
But seriously, isn't there anyone here who can tell us the rules?
It's a variant on that old thing about fox hunting, where the hunters hunt for sport, but the fox dies in earnest. And in this case, the fox is hunting for sport and the geese die. I have no idea.
No, but it was a good journey to have taken with you. Thank you. I
guess if you want to know the rules, you'll just have to show up and play. Says You returns after this.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. A number of U.S. embassies and consulates in the Muslim world are closed today. A potential terror threat has come to light, and that's also prompted the State Department to issue a global travel warning to Americans. Christopher Hill, a former U.S. ambassador to Iraq, told the BBC that authorities must have reliable intelligence to take such steps.
This suggests some very credible information about a real threat. I mean, this is not just a couple of people talking to each other. This is credible information. They would not do this otherwise. But on the other hand, it appears that they don't know where the threat is, so they are erring on the side of caution and shutting down the U.S. embassy presence in an entire region.
The White House says President Obama has been getting frequent briefings over the last week. Top security officials met this weekend to review where things stand. State media in Lebanon say at least six people are dead and several injured after a Syrian warplane fired near a refugee camp this weekend. Rasha Elash has more in Beirut.
The report says women and children are among the wounded, but it's not yet clear whether those killed were Syrian rebels or civilians. The Syrian fighter jet apparently struck near the Lebanese border town of Arsal in the Bekaa Valley, where many Syrian refugees now live. Syria has been striking targets along the Lebanese border since March. The Syrian government claims to be in pursuit of arms smugglers and terrorists, a blanket term it uses to refer to rebels. For NPR News, I'm Rasha Elas in Beirut.
In Iran, Hassan Rouhani has taken the final step in his inauguration as Iran's new president. Rouhani was sworn in today during an open session of parliament. Leaders and other representatives from more than 50 countries attended the ceremony, the first time since the 1979 Islamic Revolution that foreign dignitaries attended the ceremony of an Iranian president. Testimony begins this week in the court-martial of Nidal Hassan, the army major accused of attacking his fellow soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas, in November of 2009. NPR's Martin Costi has more.
Hassan is charged with 13 counts of premeditated murder and 32 counts of attempted murder during a shooting rampage at Fort Hood Soldier Readiness Center. Hassan was shot at the scene by civilian police and paralyzed from the waist down. A U.S. citizen of Palestinian descent, Hassan is a devout Muslim, and he's indicated religious motives for the attack. In pretrial hearings, he's argued that the shootings were a legally justifiable attempt to protect Taliban leaders in Afghanistan from American soldiers, an argument the judge has rejected. Hassan has also won the right to represent himself in court, though he still has lawyers on standby who can help him with procedural matters. Martin Costi, NPR News.
This is NPR. In Southern California, police are trying to find out why a driver plowed through the popular Venice Beach boardwalk last night, leaving one person dead and 11 others injured. A security camera video shows what happened as boardwalk vendors were run down and others fled. A spokesman for the Los Angeles Police Department, Lieutenant Andy Neiman, says a possible suspect is in custody.
We've located that vehicle quite a distance from here in the city of Santa Monica, and this individual also is in the city of Santa Monica, so he left driving that vehicle.
Amon spoke to KMBC-TV. The Venice Beach Boardwalk is a major tourist attraction. A building demolition turned chaotic this weekend as hundreds of people gathered in Bakersfield, California, to watch Pacific Gas and Electric implode a decommissioned steam power plant. Shrapnel went flying as the structures came crashing down, injuring several spectators. Daniel Carson has details.
People gathered in a nearby parking lot. Authorities say five were injured. One man was taken to a trauma center with an amputated leg, and four others were treated for minor injuries. Kern County Fire Engineer Leland Davis says a 1,000-foot perimeter was erected around the plant, and all of the injured spectators were standing in the safe zone. The power plant was decommissioned in 1986 and has been idle ever since. PG&E reached an agreement with the city to clean up the property to make way for new development. For NPR News, I'm Danielle Carson in Los Angeles.
Rescuers on Oregon's Mount Hood are planning to resume their search this morning for a snowboarder. The man was caught in the collapse of an ice tunnel with five companions yesterday. His five companions escaped unhurt and called police. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Port Townsend, Washington comes from the Clemente Course for the Humanities, teaching the humanities at a college level to people living in economic distress. On the web at clementecourse.com. That's C-L-E-M-E-N-T-E.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of the Chimicum Auditorium, just outside Port Townsend, Washington, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's bound and determined to walk away today with a victory, the incredibly focused Ray Serebrin. He's prepared to pay the price for victory at any cost. The slightly nervous Brian Toss. And she promises to enforce an intellectual discipline guaranteed to produce that victory. That's the steely-eyed guarantee of Captain Paula Lyons. And, of course, Paula, you're prepared to lead this team into victory?
I am going to do my darndest.
Yes, that's good to know. To my left, team two, she promises she'll do her best to grapple with fact and fiction, Emily Warren. She promises she'll use artful deception to bluff with the best of them. That's Patty Miles. And he promises that he'll get the most out of his teammates, because frankly, he's a little short of cash. That's Arnie Raceman. And you'll captain, of course, the victory.
Good on radio, is it?
That's good on radio. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. Bob Bird of Birmingham, Alabama. I love saying that. Yeah. Bob Bird of Birmingham, Alabama, tries to keep us up with current lingo.
Oh.
Here's a few ones he's heard lately. 10 points if you can tell me what is meant by, Patty, child supervision. The new
There's
term.
A new definition of that?
Yes.
Child supervision. An electronic camera hooked into your baby's baby room.
That's just a little too big brother for me. No, that's not it.
Really?
That is not it.
Just parental control for the internet?
Yeah, through GPS? Through the cell phone?
an ankle bracelet.
It's a mental ankle bracelet. No, it's not that, actually. You're going the wrong way here. Oh. In this case, the child is the supervisor.
I see.
Oh.
Child supervision.
Does that help you at all?
Well, that certainly changes it.
Yes, it does.
How about how to handle the computer?
I'm sorry?
It's about a child teaching the parents how to handle a computer?
Well, you know what? That's exactly right. We led you there, so we'll give you 7 points for that.
Okay.
But when an older person, especially a parent, needs a tech-savvy kid to help them with computers or electronic devices, it's always, Jimmy, can you send your kid over here to help me with my Google Plus account? I need a little child supervision. So that's what that's all about.
All right.
So you get 7 points for that. Try this one, Brian. What might be meant by the new term facepalm?
Facepalm?
F-A-C-E-P-A-L-M. Facepalm.
Facepalm.
Yeah, does it have anything to do with Facebook?
Does it have anything to do with this?
Yes, it does.
Oh, yes.
Wait a minute. What is yes?
You're on radio.
We're on radio.
What is yes? Anything to do with putting your hand.
Is that like just in despair, just going, oh, I can't figure out what this means?
Well, I've got it's not despair.
This means you're confused. This means you're thinking.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to give you 8 points for
all
that.
All right.
It is to reflect your reaction to incredible stupidity.
Oh, face palm.
You place the palm on the face. Ay, 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 ay.
You get a bruise on your forehead.
It's a spontaneous reaction to an amazingly stupid statement where the face or forehead of the listener meets the palm in a smacking manner. Yes, that's what that is.
Okay.
Arnie, what might be meant by the modern term sketch?
Sketch?
S-K-E-T-C-H, sketch. This I'm certain our scorekeeper knows.
Oh, say it. Say it.
Oh.
Oh, is he smug?
Unbelievable smugness, yes.
Yeah, something to do with skateboards.
Skateboard?
No, nothing to do with skateboard.
Nothing to do with skateboard. All right.
It could, but no, not really.
Sketch.
Sketchy.
Is it
yes.
Is it an action?
No, it's not an action.
Oh, it's not an action.
If someone is sketch, they're merely sketchy.
How about that?
I can't tell you how close you are. Yeah, you're really narrowing in on it.
Somewhat unsavory.
Good.
That's exactly right. Very good.
Woo!
Very good.
Good, Patty. It's a term used to describe a situation, a person, a store, a restaurant, anything that is of dubious character. That restaurant looks a little sketch. There were things moving in there. That's what sketch means.
It's too hard to say sketchy.
Yes, I guess.
Everything's shorthand today.
Right, shorthand, yes.
Why waste your breath on another syllable?
Yeah. Paula, what might be meant by parade maker?
Parade maker.
Oh, parade maker. Well, shall we just take a stab that is this someone who does something so extraordinary that they become a parade maker? You want to roll out the ticker tape and celebrate?
No, I don't want to send you off on the wrong channel there. No, that's not
that it. That is not even close.
Well, it's
somebody who has a big ego, who's attracting attention. Who attracts attention to themselves.
This is nothing about ego and attracting attention.
Someone who actually makes parades.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay,
that's good.
This is about someone who literally makes a parade.
All right, makes.
Can you figure out why?
Multiple personality disorder.
You know, and Brian came so highly recommended. That's the thing. He'll be a great panelist. Can you imagine?
What do you mean?
Who would make a parade?
Circus.
They're
coming into town.
Small town.
It could be something about coming into town, that's for sure.
All right, they're parading.
Oh, a speeder?
Not a speeder.
Slow.
Driving very slow.
All the cars lined up behind them.
That's exactly right.
Slow Drivers of America Club.
It is a driver or a car that's constantly under the speed limit, causing a backup of 20 or so cars.
Right. Yeah. At the head of every traffic jam, there is a Volkswagen bus.
Yes, that's right. To use it correctly in a sentence, those two new traffic islands in Port Townsend, boy, are they parade makers.
Right.
Points.
Give them 8 points for that, because they got there eventually. Try this one, Emily. What might be meant by Shatner commas?
What? As in the basketball?
S-H-A-T-N-E-R commas. Shatner commas.
Oh,
indulgent pauses between words or sentences, much like William Shatner might have done on Star Trek.
Hit the bell.
10 points. Overly dramatic speech is what it really means, but that's perfect. And finally, Ray, what might be meant by elevator circles?
Elevator circles.
Yes.
Elevator circles.
Boy.
These are very small crop circles that actually fit in an elevator.
Very small. Yeah. Tiny little crop circles. Mm-hmm. Elevator circles.
You were walking around in circles in a small radius.
Well, it's all about walking around in circles, but not necessarily in a small...
That you're not focused and you can't figure something out, so you're doing elevator circles?
Well, there's something you can't figure out, but what might that be?
That's the answer to this question.
What's up?
So, are you going back and forth among elevators trying to figure out which one's going to come to you?
Yep. Certainly. 10 points. That's exactly right.
Nice.
Good. That was good.
You push the up button. You're standing in the lobby of the building. You push the up button, and then you walk back and forth and back and forth trying to figure out which elevator's going to come first. That's an elevator circle, and that's what they're known as. And thank you so much to Bob Bird of Birmingham, Alabama, for giving us that question. Thanks, Bob. A little round of applause.
Oh, Bob.
Bob listens to us on WBHM in Birmingham. And we are so glad and thankful that they have had us on for over 15 years. Thanks very much, guys. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from Tony and the Roundabouts. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Arnie, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one will have the actual definition. The other two will get blank cards. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Paula's team. 10 points up for grabs to Paula if she can determine who's bluffing, or to you, Arnie, if you can fool her. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word embosk. E-M-B-O-S-K. Embosk. Gentlemen?
What a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love.
And so it begins the new season of Says You, one that features an October return to West Hartford, Connecticut, and a February foray to San Francisco. Tickets, information, and details are now up for those shows at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Other dates soon posted: this season's Beantown Follies and Winter Trip South during New England's ice to mud season. Meanwhile, for those in Hartford and San Francisco, we hope this is the year you'll become part of a live performance of Says You. Says You returns after this from home.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper. This week, it's homemade Nutella, Stump the Cook with Ted Allen, host of Chopped, and Remembering Julia Child. Join us. That's this week on The Splendid Table from 8 p.m.
Tune in for The Splendid Table every Sunday at noon.
I'm Bob Garfield, and on this week's On the Media, after unpaid interns on the movie Black Swan sued for compensation and won, more unpaid interns are demanding their day in court.
And the truth is that they were most of the time exploited. They should have been paid minimum wage, and they want their pound of flesh.
That and a busy week in the security state on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Join us for On the Media Monday night at 10 o'clock.
There are so many ways to enjoy, says you. You can listen here each week, as we hope you do. You can attend the live performance or download any show in our archive. You can contribute a question to the show. And now there's the book, Says Us, Volumes 1 and 2, a tome of games for family and fellow travelers. All this and more at SaysYou.net. SaysYou.
Like a bell that is ringing for me. And by the way that I feel, well, that bell starts to peel. I could swear I was falling. Seems like I was falling. Why, it's almost like being in love.
That is Tony and the Roundabouts. Please help me thank Tony Petrillo on guitar and vocals, Dirk Anderson on the bass, Jim Oliver on guitar, Tom Svornich on drums, John Morton on clarinet, Rex Rice on trombone, and Lee Moeller on trumpet. Is that right, Lee? Thank you very much, guys. We have had a few moments with the word embosque. We will go first to a smiling Patty Miles.
Okay, embosque. To embosque, it's from the Urban Dictionary. Oh. It is barista slang. To hawk a loogie into the latte of the unsuspecting 1%.
Kind of a flemmachino.
I want it to be that.
I guess when the waiter doesn't like the customer and expresses that. Mm-hmm. That's to embosque.
There you go.
Okay, that could be it.
Uh-huh.
Or it could be something else. Arnie, what do you say?
Well, it's a word that sort of conjures up my mother right now because I used to give her a little plant every once in a while, like Mother's Day, and then she would let it sort of like grow over a bird cage. And then until it was like you couldn't see the bird cage anymore. And then eventually the plant would drop dead, and I would come home and find a plastic version of it in the same spot. And I'd say, why'd you do that? And she said, you don't have to water these.
Mm.
Anyway, to embosque is when you want to hide, conceal, cover up, shroud something with plant life and greenery.
Hmm.
You and Bosket.
To hide something with plant
what
life.
What happened to the bird?
Don't ask.
Well, that could possibly be it. To hide something with plants and greenery to embosque it. Or something else. Emily, what do you say?
Well, this has nothing to do with greenery or espresso. It's a term for the brass rivets that you use for fastening leather to a wood frame.
When you use brass rivets to put leather on a wooden frame, you're embosking. Mm. All right, well, it could be that. Mm. Could be all about the brass rivets. Mm. That's what it could be about. It could be hiding something with plant life, or as we heard earlier in the evening, it could be a waiter expressing displeasure. It's one of those three, and the choice, Paula, goes to your team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty tough.
Oh, my. Baristas, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the upholstery brass rivets, it sounds very logical and very good, but Would that be something that would be chosen for this? I mean, it seems too...
Too pedestrian, too is pedestrian. It for you?
Thank you. That's what I'm after. It seems too pedestrian.
Well, if we want something that's out there, I think we know which one
that is. Which one is out there. And that one seems too out there. And, and Arnie's mom, there's that to consider. So.
Well, see, I know that it's either in French or in...
A language.
One of the Romance the languages is that Basque is a word for a forest. So I don't know if that's something Arnie's put together or if shrouding with plant life and greenery could be it. Embosking.
Well, the other two are tacky.
Groan.
So I'm with you on the shroud.
I'm not sure there's a reason to have a term for putting those rivets into the wood frame. I think you just put the rivets into the wood frame.
You don't need a reason. It's English.
It makes sense that there would be a term for putting the rivets into me, but I still think the plant life is probably it.
Okay, then. We're going to go with Arnie's definition, shroud with plant life and greenery.
Easy for you.
Well, Arnie, it is almost universal over here. Almost universal. It's slightly unique.
Certainly.
That they think that embossed means to hide something with greenery. Is that in fact what it means?
To shroud, especially with plants or greenery.
Yeah, that's exactly what it means. Ten points for Paula's team.
This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Alan Compton of Los Angeles, California. Alan writes, I'm coming to see you live next month, and I hope you'll do another of those categories about lesser-known movie credits. Full disclosure, I was a gaffer for many years, and we never really get our due. Do you have any of those rounds handy to whet my appetite? We do, Andy. We first did this round with our regular panelists way back in Season 2. We called it Credits Where Credits Are Due.
We'll start with the more obscure contributors to famous films and move to the more famous. The faster you identify the movie in question, the more points awarded. Carolyn, music by John Kander and Fred Ebb.
Yes.
No.
What is it?
Cabaret.
You know, if I'd have said original book by Christopher Isherwood, would you also have
known that? I would have known that.
Yes, this category is going to go a little faster than I figured. Yes, very good. 10 points.
Game three away.
It is Cabaret, original book by Christopher Isherwood, directed by Bob Fosse, starring Michael York and Liza Minnelli. Tony, directed by Blake Edwards.
Ten.
No good guess.
Pink Panther?
No. Co-starring Mickey Rooney.
Oh, my God.
Directed by Blake Edwards, co-starring Mickey Rooney.
Definitely not 10.
Two.
Two.
You figure about two? Yeah. Okay, two. I'd have gone three or four, the two.
Mickey Rooney, Blake Edwards.
Original story by Truman Capote. Directed by Blake Edwards, co-starring Mickey Rooney, original story by Truman Capote.
Not Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
How about
Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Breakfast at Judge Hardy's.
Yes. With great authority.
Yeah.
She says, Breakfast at Tiffany's, directed by Blake Edwards, co-starring Mickey Rooney, original story by Truman Capote, music by Henry Mancini, starring George Peppard. Very good. 6 points.
Moon River was the tune.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Black glasses were the look.
Arnold, original book by E.M. Forster.
Howard's End.
Oh, for crying out loud. It could have been one of six,
I think we counted.
And you got it, yes. Produced by Ismail Merchant, directed by James Ivory, starring Vanessa Redgrave and Emma Thompson.
Okay. Moving right along.
This is my personal favorite. Francine... Story by Colette.
Madame Bovary.
No. Not correct. Costumes by Cecil Beaton. Or is it Cecil Beaton?
Cecil. Whatever.
It is Cecil Beaton.
Cecil.
Yes, yeah. I'm sorry.
Period piece, big hats.
Yeah.
Direct. Yes. Directed by Vincent Minnelli.
Mm-hmm. So they're singing. Yeah. They're singing and they're dancing and they're
an
French.
American
and they have big hats.
Well, you're in the right city. Story by Colette.
Can-can.
Costumes by Cecil Beaton. Directed by Vincent Minnelli. Co-starring Hermione Gingold.
Oh, Gigi. Oh,
Gigi is correct for 4 points. Very good. Paula, screenplay by Evan Hunter.
Let me look at Mr. Reisman's notes here.
Well, I could throw one out off.
Oh, I know it. I know this one.
Blackboard Jungle?
Yes.
Blackboard.
No. Oh, good. He's so happy.
Goodness gracious.
Okay, what else could it be, Arnie? Evan Hunter.
He'll get it after this one. Screenplay by Evan Hunter. Original story by Daphne du Maurier.
Oh, Rebecca. Oh, Rebecca.
Oh.
No.
No.
Jamaica Inn. Three.
No.
Gaslight.
Screenplay by Evan Hunter, original story by Daphne du Maurier, shot on location in Bodega Bay, California.
Oh, the birds!
The birds it is, for 6 points. Very good.
Yeah.
Also, starring Tippi Hedren and directed by Alfred Hitchcock. And finally, Barry, directed by Joseph Mankiewicz.
Joseph,
a cop movie of some kind.
No.
Ben-Hur?
I think you'll have to go another.
Directed
clue.
By Joseph Mankiewicz, story by Damon Runyon.
Story by Damon Runyon. Would that be sit down, you're rocking the boat? That song?
Yeah.
Little Guys
and
Guy
Dolls.
And
Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls. Guys and Dolls. Very good.
Whoa.
Excellent.
Just a heart-rending 8 points.
Charades on the radio. Is
yes,
that
right? That's our Spotlight Round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's go on to round three. We once again thank Gary Russell of Melbourne, Florida, for contributing a round to this week's show. And this one's called Child's Play, Animal Style. Please describe the following children's games with an animal theme. Patty, go fish.
Oh.
Describe the game, go
describe
fish.
Describe the game. What is it?
It's a card game. Mm-hmm.
It is a card game.
It's very complex.
It's complicated.
I could never get it.
You throw down a card as if you're the dealer.
No.
No.
It's you're asking your opponent for a card, and if you don't have it, you tell them to go fish.
Yes.
And they have to pull a card from the deck.
And what's the object?
The object is to eventually go fishing and put the cards away.
You know what? He's exactly right. That is the object of the game. No, what is the object of the game, of course?
To win.
I knew that was going to be.
To win all the cards.
Paula, can you help him out there?
Well, you're going for four of a kind, and then you can lay them down, and you're trying to get the whole darn
deck. I told you it was complex.
Yeah, all right. Try this one, Brian.
Mm.
Horse.
Oh. Is a game of basketball.
It
in
is?
Which you have to play with a basketball and make a shot, and their opponent has to match the shot, and if they don't match the shot, then they get a letter against their score, and if they do match the shot, then the Celtics win the championship.
That's true. And of course,
we like
that.
Yeah,
right. If they can't match the shot,
they get a letter, they gain a letter like H.
That's right. And the object, of course, is to not get the word horse attributed to you.
Right.
10 points.
Okay.
Nice job.
I didn't know that one.
Try this one, Arnie. Duck, duck, goose.
Oh. Okay, go ahead and pick it.
You're in a circle,
mm-hmm.
and you go duck,
right.
duck, 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 and then you do goose.
Goose. And slap.
And you slap that.
What?
And
what? What was that?
On the head. That
and you win if you're the only one not unconscious at the end of the game.
And the goose chases you around the circle.
From behind.
Mm-hmm. And you try to sit down in their seat.
In their seat.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly
sort of
right.
Like musical chairs.
Yeah.
Nicely done. That's a team effort, 10 points.
Yeah.
It's like a stag dance party.
It's like a what?
Try this one,
Paula. Another way to make pate.
I see we've degenerated quite nicely, haven't we? Team two. Try this one, Paula. Cat's Cradle.
Oh.
And I'm going to have trouble with this because I really can't follow this description, so do the best you can.
I don't think I know this one unless it's a yo-yo thingy-dingy. Is it? I don't know Cat's Cradle. Well, do you?
It's a strange thing.
And Cat's Cradle is?
It's actually a girl's game. Two things.
It's two things.
Okay. Yes, and the third one, no. Sorry. It's a game played with string.
It is.
And actually, it's two games played with string. There's one where you make a pattern with an endless loop, as opposed to a loop with ends, I suppose, woven between your fingers, and you hand it off to the person next to you, and they make a different figure with a bit of manipulation. That's one version of it. Another is that you can take all by yourself, solo Cat's Cradle, and you can make all kinds of shapes and things by yourself, transforming the string, weaving, moving your fingers.
Right, by interweaving your fingers in different ways.
It's known all over the world. Every culture in the world has some form of Cat's Cradle.
And you know something?
And it's pointed.
That's 10 points. Yeah. Very good. Nice job. This one I'm going to make a little harder than you think. So don't just think it's that easy. How would you play the game, Emily? Leapfrog.
Ooh.
Don't just...
There's a hard way of playing. That's when you cover yourself with studs. Then you find some kid you really hate.
Hey, you want to play leapfrog?
Does it involve having to answer a question?
This is not the game where a kid stoops down in front of you and you jump over them.
Yes, it is that game, but there's more to it than that.
You take slimy frogs and you throw it at people.
Yeah. It's usually a goal that you do not want to reach.
Mm. Yes.
Which is the end of a broken sidewalk, a pit, a swimming pool of mud. There's something at the end that the last person will have to go into, so you try and shorten your leaps.
That is exactly right. Very good, Arnold. That's,
wow.
That's it. As you approach the goal, obviously the object is to take smaller and smaller leaps, but the person you're jumping over has not decreased any in size,
right?
So it becomes harder and harder, and finally the last jump is into the pit or across the line.
Right.
And that's leapfrog. And finally, try this one, Ray, a game I had never heard of. Fox and Geese.
Oh, Fox never and heard of Geese. This is a game I also have never heard of. Go for it.
Neither have I.
Oh.
It's sort of
Brian?
It's a variant on that old thing about fox hunting where the hunters hunt for sport, but the fox dies in earnest.
Mm.
And in this case, the fox is hunting for sport and the geese die. And I have no idea.
No, but it was a good journey to have
Wasn't
taken with you.
Thank you.
Fox and Geese, is this a an updated version of Duck, Duck, Goose?
It's not. I never heard of this, but it's interesting.
Is the game played with tokens of some sort?
It is, actually.
Wow. Oh,
good.
So it's like a Tiddlywinks game?
It is a board game.
It's a board game.
Yes. Right. And so it is played with tokens.
And the fox is chasing a goose, and you are moving around the board in an attempt to... consume a goose as if you were a fox.
Anybody understand that?
And if you pass goal, you get $200?
Okay, fine. 10 points. I gave you 10 points early on, for...
For getting it right.
Yes.
It's
true. It is a board game, and the geese win if they can surround the fox so that the fox cannot move. The fox wins if it captures enough geese that the remaining geese can't surround it anymore. So has anyone ever heard of this game, Fox and Geese? In the snow?
Snow.
Huh. Well, Gary says
snow
it's
geese?
A...
What?
Gary says it's a board game. So I asked the radio audience, I had never heard of this game. If you could send me any information, links, or anything like that, please do so. And in a future show, we'll pick up again on Fox and Geese. Mm. Thanks to Gary Russell for sending us that category. We appreciate it, Gary. And let's go on to round four, which is Paula's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Arnie, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word...
Hey!
Ope. Ope. O-L-P-E. Ope. How else would you spell ope? Gentlemen?
Ope.
It must have been moonblown way up in the blue. It must have been moonblown that led me straight to you.
Support for Says You in Port Townsend, Washington comes from the Port Townsend Film Institute, informing, educating, and inspiring with independent cinema, and producing the Port Townsend Film Festival this September. Information on the web at ptfilmfest.com. And the Puget Sound Express, educational programs, whale watching, things to know, on the web at PugetSoundExpress.com.
We seem to float right through the air.
Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back.
Rock and roll is filled with memorable lyrics, but sometimes the most powerful songs say it with no words at all. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. It's the best rock instrumentals this week on Sound Opinions.
Tune in for Sound Opinions Friday nights at 10 and Sunday nights at 7.
On the next Radio Lab.
It's almost as if you've walked through a pinhole camera into the past.
Stories about trying to figure out what actually happened.
This is about truth.
You're imagining it because I've described it to you, but that's not the same thing.
And the pursuit of truth, properly considered, shouldn't stop short of insanity.
Hidden Truths. That's on the next Radio Lab.
Join us for Radio Lab every Sunday night at 8 and Wednesday night at 10.
You can hear Says You again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. That is Tony and the Roundabouts. Thanks, guys. We have had a few moments with the word ope. And we'll go first to Brian Toss.
Well, this apparently has to do with physically strenuous, sweaty nights. And no, not that kind of sweaty night. A night like a knight in armor.
Oh!
Because it's... What were you thinking? So an ope is a sweat-absorbent pad worn under a hauberk.
Worn under a what?
Hauberk. I assume that's a kind of armor. So it's a medieval form of under armor. It's a...
Yeah, my favorite.
You've got chainmail.
Joke never gets old, does it? No, it never gets old. A sweat-absorbent garment worn under a hauberk.
It says I might be mispronouncing this. Hauberk. Hauberk.
Okay. However it's pronounced, there's sweat under there. And you got to soak it up so you get the ope and you're good to go. Well, it could be that, or Paula, something else.
Well, actually, ope seems to be a Norwegian word for something that's quite useful there in the frozen north, because it's a container for, let's just say, certain warming liquids, and it's made of leather.
Made of what?
Leather.
Leather.
Okay.
A leather container for liquids. Very useful up north, very in the Nordic regions. Okay, could be. Or it could be something else. Ray, what's your take?
Actually, an ope is an antique tool that is used to shave wood. It was originally developed in Holland. Oddly enough, it is most popularly associated with the making of wooden shoes.
an antique wood shaving tool used to make wooden shoes is an op.
If we had any Dutchmen in the audience, they'd already know that.
That's probably true. Do we have any Dutchmen in the audience?
They left.
Don't say anything. It's an antique wood shaving tool used in the making of Dutch wooden shoes. It's a leather container for liquids that the Nordic folks seem to like. Or it's a sweat... Remember the sweat-absorbing garment a couple of minutes ago? that a knight would wear. It's one of those three, and the choice goes to your team, Arnold.
Either Brian is playing us with his inability to pronounce something on a card, or he's playing us.
I'm torn between the night sweat and the leather.
The night sweat and the leather.
Well, you could combine them.
Okay. Let's party.
The leather container for liquid was so brief that it almost made sense.
Which one?
For it to be that one. The leather container
the
for
leather container for
hot
for
liquids.
Warm liquids.
Yes.
I wasn't sure what she meant by warm liquids, but
warming.
She was very cagey.
She said warming.
For warming,
warming
liquids?
Liquids.
Booze.
You set
booze.
A fire under the leather?
Booze.
Oh.
Yeah,
I think I'm going with the leather container.
Leather container.
Well, Ope sounds Scandinavian. So we have two Scandinavian definitions.
We have two?
Yeah. Dutch.
Oh, well, it's Dutch. Not. Southern Scandinavia.
I think you just
make a wrong turn in Denmark
peoples.
And maybe.
I'm,
so,
oh.
No, no, go ahead. No, go ahead. So you're thinking it's either Dutch or Norwegian?
Yeah, and so I think it's the leather drinking, kind of like the whiskey containers you bring to football games, because only in a colder climate would the liquid not.
But I did love the delivery of the sweaty night.
Yes, the sweaty night delivery was worth an award of some sort. But you were liking the leather also, huh? Okay, we'll go with Paula.
Well, after agonizing over it for several minutes, they've come to the conclusion that an old
sketch night
is a... sort of a container, a leather container for liquids. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Ulp, a leather flask for
Whoa!
Liquids.
That is exactly what it is. Yeah. 10 points for your team, Arnold. Let's close. Deborah McCaskey of San Pablo, California, checks in with a category we call On Your Mark. For 5 points, please define the following marked terms. And for an additional 5, take a shot at the derivation. Try this one, Patty. Earmark.
Oh. Earmark.
So earmark is something that you choose or decide is what is going to be focused on. You're going to earmark a particular item or object or idea.
Yes, that's right. That's
and the
5
derivation
points.
Of it...
Think about it so long you fall asleep on it.
I'm guessing an animal, cattle sales possibly. There was animals were marked on the ear. Hey,
that's exactly right. Very good, Patty. Very good. It is any identifying or distinguishing mark or characteristic, and it's from the 16th century. It referred to a cut or a mark placed in the ears of sheep and cattle, showing a sign of ownership. Very nicely done. Try this one, Brian.
Hmm.
Definition and derivation of hallmark.
A hallmark would be the Guild Hall, and it had a distinguishing mark that they would put on their products, and that's a hallmark. How's that?
And where does it come from?
Definition.
Oh, from guild organizations.
You know, I have to say, cigar? I think that's that. I'm going to give you the 10 points. Yeah. It is the definition again. Could you just give it to me again? The definition
of
a
hallmark. No, I've forgotten it by now.
It's, okay. Can anyone over there tell me the definition of a hallmark?
It's a mark, a physical mark, like an embossed, embedded mark that identifies where the product came from, what guild hall it came from.
Yeah, it is a feature or quality that's typical of someone or something, and it's from the metalsmith's mark, put on gold, silver, or platinum.
I mean, they're still using it. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Showing the it, and shows the quality of the metal and indicates where the object was made.
Very good.
Try this one, Arnie. Benchmark.
A benchmark is a sort of symbol of a turning point or a special bump in the road. It's Gesundheit. I'm waiting for you.
Sorry.
Why it's a benchmark? Got any ideas?
It's a measure.
It's a measure.
It's a measure. Yeah. Yes. Oh. It's a measure. So it's a milestone.
It's a milestone.
And it's what it's the benchmark when you begin the process. So here's our benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
How high are we going to go?
Okay.
And this is.
So it's literally from a bench size, or.
I would think it's weightlifting.
Wait.
Weightlifting.
As in weightlifting. Does it derive from weightlifting?
It does not.
It does not. Does it derive from the actual concept of a bench that you sit on?
In a way, yes.
Is it a sports reference?
No, not a sports reference
at
all.
You've reached the milestone and can sit down.
No.
It's where you begin.
In what endeavor might something that's that strong a reference be used?
Carpentry, building.
Baseball.
Carpentry.
Well, yes, in carpentry, but this is not. The measuring aspect is very important to all of this.
Does it have to do with writing, paper?
No, it does not. Does anyone on the other side have a thought?
Not really. I mean, a benchmark, I've always known it to be sort of a standard against which you judge things, but does it come from something as simple as a cobbler's bench? Or?
It's a starting point, and
it's
that's
a starting
very important.
Point.
That's what Emily said.
So is it from racing?
No. Audience, you want to give it a shot?
Surveyor. Surveyor.
Exactly right.
Oh.
From surveyors. That's when it would be real important to know where you started.
Right.
Oh.
It is from the early 19th century, a surveyor's point of reference, a chiseled horizontal mark in a stone where a leveling rod could be placed. And so that's where you start from. That's how you know it's the reference. But you've got a long way there. I'm going to give you 8 points for that. And nice job. Try this one, Paula. Definition and derivation of sitz mark.
It's all I ever did.
Do you know what it is?
I believe Brian? I do. Yeah.
Well, speak up, Brian.
I'm sorry. It's evidence of less than prowess at skiing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Oh, right. Oh, right. Remember that club in Boston that was called the Sitz and Jibers? That's what that is. Sitz is a mark you make when skiing.
That's exactly what it is. 10 points. Yes.
So, but what does it mean in common parlance, though?
It's a depression left in the snow by a skier falling backward.
Named Sitz.
Yeah.
So does it mean failure of some sort?
No, it's from the German Sitzen, to sit, and from the English mark. That's how they put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And along those lines, Emily, what might be meant by telemark?
Telemark.
What's the definition and derivation of telemark?
Well, that's the backcountry skiing, and you have your heels are not in place, so you can lift your heel up and go through powder from great heights all the way down below. What does it come from?
And it comes from the town, telemark.
That's
in Norway.
In Norway.
Yeah.
10 points. Yeah. You guys are just eating this one up.
Indeed.
That is exactly right. In skiing or ski jumping, it's a style of turning or landing with one ski forward and bent knees, and it is from Telemark, the region in. It's not a town per se. I don't think it's the region in Norway. Yeah.
But Arnie, you've never skied in your life, even though you're from
Colorado. No, but I saw the movie The Heroes of Telemark.
Now we know.
That's right. He was a movie critic for years. So that.
And finally, and I'll really help you out on this one, Ray, I did not know this until this morning, and I loved finding this out. Definition and derivation of word mark.
Word mark.
Yes. W-O-R-D-M-A-R-K.
Give me a hint.
Word mark.
What does it sound like?
Maybe like an editing term, or it's that marred place on your computer screen you get from punching it when word program frustrates you.
When it damn that
I like that to be the truth, but no, that's not it.
So a word mark might be something a printer might.
No, it's your
printer words.
No,
editing,
not really.
Word mark.
A word
help.
Mark.
Team,
I,
help.
I haven't.
What does it? What other word does it make you think of when I say word mark? What other
word mark? Woodwork.
Word mark. Word mark. Word mark. Word mark. Word mark.
Walmart.
Walmart.
Walmart. Walmart. Word mark.
No, I think I'm throwing you off with that.
Like these two guys talking. Like word a, mark. Yeah.
Place mark? Is it like a place mark? No.
A word something. Would it be a word something or a something mark?
It is a word something. That's for sure. Something.
So a word mark, is it a word that that you always use to designate...
To identify something.
...a particular place or thing?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Great, who would use it?
Who would use a word mark? It's on a Kindle.
Actors?
A writer. A printer.
Or a theater projectionist. For when to change the reels.
I got it. No. Oh, that's
good
idea.
They
actually use a dot on the screen, but that sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did sound good, but no. It is a word. I always think, when I saw the word mark, I thought of trademark. And it's very close to that. Can you come up with anything?
A publisher's trademark.
Oh,
publisher's.
Like a neologism? How do you pronounce that? A new word? Like you register a new word?
No,
I'm patenting word.
I like that. Is it a publisher's mark?
You know what? I'm going to give you 7 points. I'm going to go to the other side.
This thing.
Any help from that side?
Is it when you stamp a word in a piece of paper so you know it's the trademark of
the publisher?
Oh, no,
that's a great... no, that's not it. Anyone in the audience know? Can you give me an example of one?
Kleenex? Oh, that's a trademark.
That's a trademark.
It is a word used as a logo for a company which attempts to convey the sense of the enterprise. Are you familiar with the CNN logo or Google? Those are considered word marks because they actually try to imply what they do. 7 points for your effort, which gives you an astounding total.